Okay, so we've survived Tisha B'Av, and Mashiach is still not here, apparently. So let's learn a little bit about what is. So what have we done? The first class we talked about what is the actual, the fundamental belief, the Ani Ma'amid Emunah Shleima. What does that mean? What's necessary to believe? What are we required to know? In terms of our religion, in terms of part of our avodas Hashem, part of our observance as our celebration of being Jewish, involves a belief in Mashiach and a waiting for Mashiach and an assumption that Mashiach will come each and every day. So that we talked about in the first class. The second, we're going to get back to some of that today as well. Last time we talked about we defined some of the terms that we have around Mashiach. The idea was Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, Eliyahu, Gog u'Magog, and we discussed last time the different approaches that Rishonim take, both in terms of how literally do we interpret A midrash and B statements in Tanakh, see Gemaras regarding the miraculous nature of what Mashiach will be. And we distinguished last time between the Rambam, who seemed to have a very rationalistic point of view, versus the Rishonim in Europe, Rashi, Tosfos, etc., that seemed to have a much more miraculous point of view, such as Beis HaMikdash falling from Shem, like who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash? So Rashi seemed to assume that the Beis HaMikdash was going to fall from Shemayim. And the Rambam said, no, the Rambam said, we're going to go, whoever builds the Beis HaMikdash, he'll be called Melech HaMashiach. Right? It's going to be a much more rationalistic point of view from the Rambam. We discussed that last time as well. We're going to carry that on a little bit. I just one ha'ara, one little point that I saw today. Right? Dr. David Berger, I think did he ever come here before? I think did he ever speak in the shul? He was never here. Okay, so Dr. David Berger has an article of, I forgot what it was called, interesting like coincidental ramifications of Maimonides' rationalistic view of Mashiach, where he makes the following point, that what perhaps was motivating the Rambam to have such a rationalistic point of view? So we assume that it was emes. The Rambam thinks it's true. That's what we assume. But perhaps what was motivating the Rambam to make it so clear, the Rambam several times over those last two chapters in Hilchos Melachim says nothing's going to change and don't expect miracles and everything's going to be there. Why does the Rambam seem to emphasize it so much? So Dr. Berger said the reason is because the Rambam was in a way fighting against messianism, fighting against people's belief that don't think it's going to be so amazing and don't think it's going to solve all the world's problems, myself, many of the world's problems, don't think it's going to solve all your problems, don't think things are going to change, things are going to remain pretty much normal, just you're going to be able to devote a lot more time to avodas Hashem. Right, that's kind of the Rambam laid out. So he points out that dafka, because the Rambam was so rationalistic in his point of view, it made it difficult to disprove messianic figures. So someone like Shabtai Tzvi comes along and says, "I'm Mashiach." Right? So if you go within the Tosfos school of thought and the Rashi school of thought, it's, "Oh yeah, prove it." Right? Let's see your miracles that you're going to perform. And he can't perform any miracles, so okay, so then we know he's not Mashiach. But the problem is if he said, well, he pulls out the Rambam and says, no, it doesn't say I have to perform any miracles, it just says I gotta be very charismatic. I gotta be able to gain a lot of followers, I gotta be able to be a king-like figure, I'm gonna lead everybody back to Eretz Yisrael. That's all it says I have to do, it doesn't say I have to perform any miracles. Right? So in a way, the rationalistic point of view of the Rambam was able to push some of the figures that we had over the course of our history. So that's just a point that he made. Anyways, let's get into today a little bit. So I want to start off tonight by discussing the role of mitzvos. There's a concept that mitzvos will fall away, lasid lavo b'zman ha-mashiach. I'm going to talk about that, and that will then blend into, well, what exactly are we waiting for? Why hasn't Mashiach come yet? What's taking so long? So we had this Rambam already. We've read this probably in each of the other two classes. Hamelech HaMashiach Asid Lamud Ulahachzir Malchus David LeYoshan Memshelas HaRishona. What's Mashiach going to do? He's going to return the kingdom of David to its original form. Uvona HaMikdash Mekabetz Nidchei Yisrael. He'll build the base of Mikdash and gather everyone together. V'chozen Kol Mishpatim B'yamav K'shayu Mikodem. Machriven Karbanot. Right, they're going to return all of the laws as they always have been. Machriven Karbanot. So you're going to bring Karbanot. V'osin Shmat and Yovelos, and we're going to have Shmita and Yovel again. Kechol mitzvos hamur b'Torah, like all the other mitzvos that we have in the Torah. What's implied by the Rambam here? Now, what's going to change in terms of observance of mitzvos? Nothing, right? Mitzvos are going to stay the same, right? Why does he say that? So presumably it's based on our friend Shmuel that appeared in the Gemara and Shabbos, among other places. Damar Shmuel, Ein Bein Olam Hazeh Liyamos HaMashiach, El Shibud Golios Volvad. The Shmuel is of the opinion that nothing's going to change. There will be no difference between the way the world is now versus the way it will be done in the future. The only difference will be that all of the exiles will be able to gather together in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? That's this. Yeah, the Rambam, right, the Rambam said it's based, the Rambam explicitly quotes that mimer of Shmuel, correct? Correct, no, he quotes Shmuel. He doesn't just say the same language. He says, as our rabbis in the Talmud taught us, this line of Shmuel. That's, of course, that's the Rambam's opinion. The problem is you get to, there's a Gemara in Nida. We'll start here. There's a lot of different, I decided not to like cover all of the different examples. We'll cover one of them. There's several examples throughout Shas, but more really within the Midrashim, of examples of mitzvos that either will fall away or will not have to be observed anymore. I mean, the prohibitions will fall away, and the positive commandments might not be observed anymore. So I didn't decide not to cover all of those in so much depth. But this one is a Gemara, and the Rambam paskins like this Gemara, as we'll see. So beged she'avad bo kelayim, Tana Rabbanan, beged she'avad bo kelayim, that you have a piece of clothing that it became shatnez, we think. Right, that it you had a piece of linen that was laying out there, and a piece of wool falls on top of the linen, and oy gevalt, where am I going to be able? You know, I start looking, and I call in the shatnez people, and I know for sure that I know for sure it fell there someplace, but I can't get the wool out. All right, so what do we do? What do we do with this garment? And far be it from us to just waste this garment. Right, we don't want to do that. So there's a source sheet over here if you want to. So Hariza lo yim karenu lo vikochavim. So the Gemara tells us, so don't sell to vikochavim. Maybe bring a few of them to the back so that anyone else. So lo yim karenu lo vikochavim. So we don't sell it to a non-Jew. V'lo yasenu mardas l'chamor. We don't sell it to a non-Jew. Why don't we sell it to a non-Jew? Right? Non-Jews aren't prohibited from wearing shatnez, not prohibited from wearing kalayim. So the concern is that, you know, once it enters the cycle, so it's going to pop back out again, right? If we sell to a non-Jew, a non-Jew is then going to sell it to a Jew, and this shatnez garment is going to continue circulating within our, you know, some Jew is going to get this shatnez garment, and they're not going to know, and that will be terrible. The second thing is don't make a saddle for the chamor. Don't make a donkey saddle out of it, right? Why not? So again, the Gemara, Rashi explains, because we're afraid you're going to cut off it, you're going to need a patch for your pants, and you're going to go to the saddle, right? You're going to cut off a piece, and you're going to use that as a patch. All right, so that's not a good idea either. So meanwhile, I got this garment. I can't, it's shatnez, I can't wear it. What could I do with it? So the Gemara says, oh, we got an idea. Osem yimenu tachrichin lemes. Use it for shrouds for the dead person. Right? Well, it's a problem. No? Okay? The Gemara says, use it as shrouds for the dead person. Okay, so that's a good halacha, right? Shrouds could be made out of shatnez. So Amar of Yosef. Zosomeris, according to this idea, mitzvos betelos liasid lavo. It must be that what's motivating this opinion is that mitzvos are going to be nullified in the future. What does that mean? What's the problem here? So, what's the problem? What's the solution? The problem is that, okay, it's very good the person's dead. Right? The person's not obligated in mitzvos. There's nothing wrong with me putting shatnez on him. But in when Techiyas HaMesim comes along, this person's going to wake up, And they're going to feel themselves around, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I got a good garment on, and they're going to go walk around in the street, and they're going to be wearing shatnas. I give out. Right? After a while, the person's going to wake up, and they're going to be wearing shatnas with tachiyas semesim, with the revival of the dead. So how do we get out of this problem? So the Gemara says, it must be that after tachiyas semesim, after the dead are revived, there won't be an obligation in mitzvos at that point. Right? Ein mitzvos betelus yasid lavo. Okay? Okay. Maybe not. You spill all the punchlines, Rabbi Cohen. So Amar Le'Abayi, V'Itema Rav Tema, V'Hama Rav Mani, Amar Rav Yane, Lo Shanu, El Svedo, V'Alakobru Aser. So some Amaraim say, no, it doesn't mean that you actually bury them in that ground, in that garment. It means you only give a hesped for them in the garment. I mean, the person's dead, right? So you could cover them with the shatnas garment, but before you bury them, you got to take the garment off. But then the Gemara says, so Amar Lei, no, Lavit Mara, that's not what we said. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, I feel the kova. Rabbi Yochanan said, no, you can bury the person. Rabbi Yochanan Latamed, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Maidich Siv, Bamesim Chafshi. Right, Rabbi Yochanan is going according to his reason. What Rabbi Yochanan says, what does the Pasuk mean that the dead are free? Kevan Shemes Adem, Nase Chafshi Min HaMitzvos. As soon as a person passes away, they become free from mitzvos. I mean, the obligation of mitzvahs is never going to occur for them. And this is not the only... I put another statement among the... And the Rambam, in fact, paskins this way. The Rambam in Hilchos Kalayim, Perek Yud Alach Chafei, Mutter Lasos Min HaKalayim, Tachrichin Lameis, She'ein Alameis, and Mitzvah. Right? There's no mitzvah for the dead. The dead people don't have mitzvahs anymore. What about the idea that they're going to wake up and they're still going to be wearing their shatnas garment, presumably? Right? What's the concern about that? Right? It seems to be a stira, right? A contradiction. On one hand, we have the Rambam saying that nothing's going to change, everything's going to be the same. On the other hand, he's saying you could go ahead and bury these people with shatnas garments because they're going to wake up, and what's the big deal? They're not going to be chayav mitzvos at that point. So how do you resolve this? So Rabbi Cohen already pointed this out. Rabbi Cohen points out, and he's not the first, that the Rambam, as we've already alluded to, not in this year, but in previous year, there's two different periods. On one hand, we have the period of Mashiach, right, where the Rambam seems to say that not much is going to change. And then, after that, is what we call Olam Haba, is what we call, what sometimes is referred to as Li'asid Lavo, what's going to be in the future, or what's known as maybe the period of Gan Eden, Tchiyas HaMesim. And we assume that Tchiyas HaMesim, or at least one can answer this question by saying that Tchiyas HaMesim, the revival of the dead, is only going to come back after that. And as soon as Mashiach announces himself, doesn't mean all the graveyards are going to open up and everyone's going to climb out of them. Right? That's going to be a long time later. That's going to be a while, Li'asid Lavo, in the future, after the period of Mashiach. And that, well, what happens after the period of Mashiach, that requires a different lecture series. Okay? So I'm not really sure yet. I gotta do some work on that. So that also would explain some of the other statements that appears in Chazal. For instance, there's a Ritva in Maseches Kedushin that says... No. What the Chevr Kedisha does is not necessarily a preparation for the person to be born again. What the Chevr Kedisha does is the way that we treat we with dignity treat a person because that was their body that they used for the performance of mitzvahs throughout their lives. So that's the purpose of the Chevr Kedisha. What I'm talking about is, what about this fear of they're going to... For instance, you remember the Chevr? So some chevras have the custom. This is a big machlokus among chevra kedishas. But whether by male, they bury the person with their talus, and some have the custom of cutting off the corner of their talus. If anybody ever heard of this custom? So that's relevant to this idea. That's relevant to here. Whether the person's going to wake up and they're going to be wearing a garment without a talus, So you could cut off the talus, or you could cut off a corner of the talus. That way, they're not obligated in tzitzis going forward either. But yeah, that's a. But it doesn't. I haven't gotten rid of the job of the chever. The job of the chever is still very important. That's the way we treat the body. Because the body was the kli. The body was the vessel that was used to perform many mitzvahs in this world, and therefore it demands respect, such as other things that we use mitzvahs for, right? Like the Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is not the only thing that gets buried, but even the covering of a Sefer Torah gets buried as well. The covering of a Sefer Torah was never used, you know, that doesn't necessarily have the shame Hashem on it. It has the shame of a very righteous donor, but it doesn't have the shame of Hashem on it. So why do we do that? No, because it was used to protect the shame Hashem. So Zohar of Soloveitchik talks about this often, that the No, I agree, but that's because of what's happened in the past. It's not necessarily about what's going to happen in the future. Right? You understand the distinction? Yeah, so the Rambam doesn't seem to hold that opinion. The Rambam assumes that the Mashiach ben David is going to be a regular person. Not a regular person, but he's going to be a person that's not going to be required to perform any miracles. And his main job is going to be the leader of the Jewish people, to lead, to reestablish the Malchus in Eretz Yisrael, and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. None of those jobs necessarily require miracles. I mean, it does, but it doesn't require open miracles. Right? The idea of Tchias HaMesim and the idea and some of those other concepts that you have Olam HaNeshamos, the world, you know, all of those things, that could come back. That might be much later. The Gemara has a discussion about it, when that's going to be, but that's going to be after the period of Mashiach. There will be a period of Mashiach before you get to that era, according to the Kabbalah Rishon. Okay, so this idea of that there's different periods, that there's an idea of Zman Mashiach, and then later on also could explains many other statements of the Rishon. One of them being the Ritva here, the source number 5, Chidushei HaRitva. Va'alehem Amru BaHagada. On them it says in the Haggadah, right? On them it's referring to pigs, actually, chazirim. Lama nikra shemo chazir. Why did they call them chazir? She'asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahachziru liYisrael asid lavo. That in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return them to Jews in the future. The asid lavo. That there is going to be this, the implication of this medrash is, now it's unclear where the authenticity of this medrash, but many Rishonim quote this medrash, that there's an idea that the pig is going to become kosher again. And you may have heard the concept of the Leviasim fish. The Leviasim fish is something that all the tzaddikim are going to get to eat. There's going to be this big pseudo where everybody's going to eat, right? So what is that talking about? Is that talking about the Zman Mashiach? Is that talking about when Mashiach ben David reveals himself and says, yeah, everybody, let's go back to our Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? So we don't have to say that. Then he could say, no, that's much later. That's by the Olam HaNeshama. That's Olam Haba. That's a much different era than what we've been talking about so far. So in a way, that could answer all of these problems, but not necessarily all of them, which we'll get to shortly. The Rav Elchanan Wasserman, in his Sefer Kovetz Shiurim, he deals with this question. He asks. He says, without getting into this time of Mashiach versus Olam Haba, he says, well, what's going on here? He says, I thought the Torah... It's very nice the Rambam has 39 imamims. The first of them is that the Torah is true. Not necessarily the first then. But one of the earlier ones is that the Torah is true and the Torah is not going to change. And what are you talking about? That all of a sudden we get this Zman HaMashiach and everything's going to change. Rabbi Mitzvah Spetelos Lassad Lava, Rav Elchanan says, it must be after Tchias HaMesim. He just makes the assumption that what we've said. It must be after Tchias HaMesim. The Ilulim Mosa Mashiach Vada Yinagu Kol HaMitzvahs, that during Mashiach all the mitzvahs are going to be relevant. L'chor HaKasha Da Achar Mi'ikari Had Dasu shezos haTorah lo tishtan liolam. But the whole thing is a problem because the Torah is never supposed to change. What are you talking about? The Torah could change. So v'yishlomer da kavana beikar hazeh shedini haTorah lo yishtanu mikafisha nemru b'sinai mirosh Rabbeinu Lavashom. Now, what does it mean that the Torah won't change? It won't change from what Moshe came down from Har Sinai with. That's what it won't change from. The gamzen nemar b'sinai shelasid lava yuha mitzvos betelos. But what was included in the things that Moshe came down from Har Sinai with? What was included is that liyasid lavo, by tchias amesim, whatever, later there'll be a day that will come that some of the mitzvahs will change. I mean, the question was, how could it be that Torah is going to change at all? The answer is, the Torah is not changing. It's all there. I mean, all of these ideas that we're talking about, Mashiach, etc., all of that are things that Moshe came down from Har Sinai with. It's all part of the... It's not that anything's changing. The original understanding was always like that. It just, you know, we're just not going to see it for a little bit while. That's answer A. Answer B is, Answer B is that what does it mean that the mitzvahs are going to be batel in the future? Who are they going to be batel for? Asks Rav Elchanan. They're only going to be not relevant. They're only going to be nullified for those people that come back from the dead. For the people that are tchias meisim. The Gemara said that after you die, so you don't have to perform mitzvahs anymore. So Rav Elchanan says, exactly. So even if there's tchias meisim, that person's not going to have to perform mitzvahs anymore. Right? The mitzvahs are only relevant while a person's alive. If they die and come back to life, so perhaps mitzvahs aren't relevant to them anymore. So some actually have tried quoting this idea for various medical procedures that exist. I don't think anybody has seriously suggested such an idea. But we have an idea that a person could, when you perform a heart transplant, if you assume that the heart is the source of life, so there is a moment where you do not have a heart. Right? No matter how fast the surgeon is, right, there's going to be a time in the middle. So if a person wakes up from their heart transplant surgery, were they dead and come back to life? Then maybe they're not chayav mitzvahs anymore. The idea's thrown around. We're not going there tonight, though. All right? So that's the idea so far. Mitzvahs betelos yosad lavo. So again, the distinction is that sure, they're mivatel, but that's not a Mashiach concept. That's a post-messianic concept. All right? Any questions so far? Yeah, that second opinion. Yeah.
Did you want to have already? We have to take the question. If our first husband dies and she marries a second husband, and he dies, and after she is on Mason,
yes, there are a lot of logical questions that we have to deal with at this point. But this one, this one you can ask Rav Elchanan, though. You can ask Rav Elchanan, well, what do you mean? That there's going to be some people alive, some people dead? He doesn't know. He doesn't. After this, he gets into Lumbus. He breaks off this topic. I don't know. That's a good question. The assumption is that what we call Olam Haba is the world as we know it's not going to exist. I mean, it's going to be a world of neshamas, a world of mitzvahs aren't necessarily going to be relevant at that point. But so far we know that during the time of Mashiach, all the mitzvahs, so we haven't gotten rid of any mitzvahs yet, necessarily. So if we go through all the other proofs that are brought, all the other examples of mitzvahs that are going to be mevatel, so again, we seem to be able to wash our hands of them by saying that's a different era, that's not talking about the Zman Mashiach. The problem is that there are two instances that I know of, I'll put the two on the page right now, that the Rambam says, Bizman HaMashiach, this mitzvah isn't going to be relevant anymore. And then you're kind of stuck. Right? How do you get out of that problem? So example number one, Maimonides in Hilchos, Megillah v'Chanukah. He puts the two of them together. The first two chapters are Megillah. The last two or three are Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Halil are found there. So the Rambam says like this, Kol Sifrei HaNeviim v'Chol HaKsuvim Asidin Livata Limos HaMashiach. Right, so all the people learning Nach Yomi now, it's not going to be relevant for much longer. Torah is going to still be relevant, but Navi, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim are going to be Mevatel, whatever that means, they're going to be nullified. Chutz, with the exception of Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther is going to continue to be relevant. Harehi Kayemes, Kechameshes Chumshei Torah. And that's going to continue like the five books of the Torah, V'chehilchel Shal Torah Shebal Peh, She'enan B'teil Mi'olam, and like the halachos of Torah Shebal Peh, which are never going to be Mevatel. I mean, the Torah itself, the five books of Moses, and the oral tradition, right, are all going to always be relevant. Just Shmuel and Malachim and Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu and the Treyasar and Tehillim and Rus and Shir Hashirim and Divrei Yamim are going to be batel, are going to be nullified, with the exception, of course, being Megillas Esther. Okay. Va'afal pi shekol zichron atzaros yivatel. And even though remembrance of all the tzaros will be batel, shenemar, as it says in Yeshayahu, ki nishku atzaros harishonos chenistiru me'ena, we're going to forget the first tzaros, they're going to be hidden from my eyes. Yemei ha-purim lo yevatel, right? Not just Megillas Esther is going to continue to exist, but Purim is also not going to be nullified. How do we know? Because Esther said so. At the end of Megillas Esther, it says, "V'imei haPurim ha'el lo yabru mitoch haYehudim, v'zichram lo yasuf mizaram." The days of Purim are not going to leave from amongst the Jews, and its remembrance will never cease from its generations to come. The Ravid gets a little bit upset. The Ravid said, well, you're going to throw out Nevi'im and Ksuvim? That's not necessarily what it means. Rather, they're not going to be learnt as much. They're going to be reference guides. They're not going to be learnt as much. Some could claim that we've been in Yavos HaMashiach for many years already, right? that's what the Rambam says. Well, a lot of the Nosei Kalim on the daf say that the Rambam really meant what the Ravid says. Why is the Ravid getting so upset? That's what the Rambam meant. The Rambam didn't mean they're going to be burnt. The Rambam meant that they're going to be we're going to stop doing the Haftorah on Shabbos. Okay, that's halacha number one. It seems to be mevatel.
What? Why do they need to be mevatel? I mean, why is it? History.
Right.
I mean, what does that do for me in terms of the Yemos HaMashiach? I'm not sure I understand what the point is.
I mean, why is it?
I mean, it doesn't do anything for my knowing my history doesn't do anything for my present. I mean, it's important to know. I mean, there's a lot of ethical lessons to learn from it.
Right. So the way I've heard this explained is that. That what really is the point of Nevi'im and Ksuvim? The point is to give illustrations of everything that's found everywhere else in Torah and Torah Shebal Peh. So those illustrations, and not just illustrations, but Musar, and it's so and a recounting of the difficulties that we've had in our past, etc. So those difficulties are not going to be necessary to remember in the future. The illustrations are not going to be necessary to remember in the future. So why? So let's do the second Rambam, and then we'll discuss. The Rambam also at the end of Hilchos Tanis, and this is relevant for just yesterday, Hatsomus Ha'elu Asidim Livatali Mosa Mashiach. These fast days, I mean, this is the last halacha in Hilchos Tainus. We just got through 5 chapters of the laws of Tainus. So he says, these laws in the future are going to be batel in the days of Mashiach, are going to be nullified in the days of Mashiach, in all the fast days. V'lo od, el sheheim asidim liyos yomim tovim bimei sason v'simcha. Not only that, but they are going to be turned from difficult days into yomim tovim, festivals, and days of joy and happiness. Shneemar, and this is an important person. Ko Amar Hashem Tzvaos, Tzom Harvi V'Tzom Hachemish V'Tzom Hashvi V'Tzom Hasiri. Thus said Hashem, the fast of the 4th month and the 5th month and the 7th month and the 10th month. We got that. 4th month is Shavua Asar B'Tammuz. Represents 4 months from Nisan. So Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. 4th month. 5th month is Av. 7th month is Tishrei. And then the 10th month is Asar B'Tevis. So those 4 festivals, those 4 fast days in the future are going to be turned into Yimei Sasan V'Simcha, as the Pasuk explicitly says, right? This isn't just around making it up. The Pasuk explicitly said these 4 fast days are going to be days of Sasan V'Simcha, Ulamoadim Tovim, and they're going to be good holidays, and concludes with the words, V'ha'emes V'ha'shalom Ehavu. And peace and love will be, and peace and truth and peace will be beloved. Well, so there's 2 very important aspects to that, which obviously are going to become one, right? And by the way, I would add that if you look in the Tanakh, there's a space between the first part of the Pasuk and the Emes Shalom Ehavu. Right, so what is this Emes? Emes Shalom and Hava, by the way, is used for has a halachic ramifications. The first part also has a halachic ramifications. But what is Emes Shalom and Hava? What is the ramifications for that? So the concept that one can lie for the sake of peace. It's a couple examples where in the Talmud where people lie. Talmud's quoting examples from Tanakh where people lie for the sake of peace. So this is considered the proof to that idea that if you have a conflict between truth and truth and peace. So shalom is ahavu. That shalom is more beloved than truth is beloved. Okay, that's a halachic ramification to that pasuk. But what in the world does it have anything to do with the first half of the pasuk? That there's going to be fast days that are going to be turned into festivals. Right, what do they have to do with each other? So the... We're running a little bit low on time. So the... The way we've always understood this is that what are we really talking about, La'asad Lavo? What is really going to be the Zman Mashiach? So we referenced this in the first class. We'll get into this again shortly. What really is the Zman Mashiach? But really, the time of Mashiach is the understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in every aspect of our lives and in every aspect of the history of our people. And what does that mean? That means that as I go back in time, as I go through all of the different things that our people had to encounter and all the different challenges that we all had to endure, we are going to understand why that was all necessary. That's what Mashiach is all about, and as we're going to see. Right, what's the point? What was the point of all the things that we've gone through? So the point of all the things that we've gone through was to get to us to where we are now. Not now, but to the Zman Mashiach. To get us to where we are now. And it's also to get us to where we are ultimately going to be. So once that happens, right, it's not going to be necessary to recall the bad times. Because the bad times, we're going to understand. Although the bad times were very bad, we're going to understand why they're necessary for what we're trying to get to. So for example, we don't have a day to commemorate Avodas Mitzrayim. Everybody wonder about that? We celebrate leaving Egypt. Why don't we remember the difficult times that we had in Egypt? So yeah, it's true that night we'll pour a little wine out, right? But there's no Yom Hazikaron Lemeisei Mitzrayim, right? Why not? Because I think with the perspective that we have now, with the vantage point that we have now, we could kind of understand why my Mitzrayim was necessary. We don't understand why it took so many hundreds of years, why that was necessary. We don't necessarily understand why the Jewish baby boys all had to be killed. I mean, we don't understand all the concepts of it, but we could kind of understand the idea that the Jews had to go through the Egyptian experience, right? We understand already Hashem told Abraham, you're going to go through the Egyptian experience, right? And you're going to come out a people from that. And you're going to come out a people that had this collective experience that's going to be able to enable you to treat other people as, right? How many times in the Torah does it say, Ki gerim ha'isam be'eretz Yisrael, because you were strangers in Mitzrayim. And that collective national experience allows you to do other things. So the Navi is telling us that all of those days, the days that we recognize in our past as being terrible, sad, horrible days, we're going to understand in the future why they were necessary. And once we understand why all of those days were necessary, we're going to be able to accept them, and they'll become Yom Tov, and we'll say, aha! It was all necessary. It was all necessary. The Ramban, the bottom source on the page is a Ramban. It has nothing to do with Mashiach. But it's a Ramban in the middle of, in Parsha, the beginning of Parshas Toldos. What's the beginning of Parshas Toldos all about? So that's the story of Rivka and Yaakov and Esav, right? Rivka is pregnant. She has Yaakov and Esav in her stomach. And what's the words that she says? She exclaims, right? The story goes, right, whenever she walked by Beis Medrash, I don't know how many Bate Midrashim there were in those days. Whenever she walked by people learning Torah, so Yaakov would try to get out. And whenever they walked by a place of Avodah Zarah, right, Esau would try to get out. There's time for the joke. A quick line. We quoted David Berger before us. So I heard a good line from him once as well, that he said he once heard from one of the Roshi Yeshiva who didn't allow, are there all these protests going on at that time? There's still protests nowadays, right? It's one of the Roshi Yeshiva would never allow their students to go to this protest. They would never allow that, right? He said, we're going to sit and learn. We're not going to go out to protest. So when he was asked why, he said, well, because Rivka, maybe the story goes that Rivka had these two babies in her stomach, right? One was trying to get out by the Beis Medrash, one was trying to get out by the Avodah Zarah place. So therefore she knew that there were two, right, that there were two children within her. So he said that maybe there was only one child in her. And when she walked by the Beis Medrash, the baby was trying to get out to go learn. And when she walked by the base of Avodah Zarah, the child was trying to get out to go protest. Right? So what do we see from this? We see that children, yeah, they're not supposed to go protest so much. It must have been that it was two different people. Anyways, so so she said, what's the line that she said? She said, I'm in so much pain, but Tomer im kain lama ze anochi. If I'm supposed to go through all of this, lama ze anochi. Why is this me? Or who am I? Or what's the point of me? It's unclear what the words even mean. Lama zanochi. So Rashi gives an explanation. The Ramban quotes Rashi that he says that if this is the case, I don't want to have a baby. You know, it's too much, right? In King Gadol Tzar Aver Lama zanochi mispelas misav al harayin. Why did I ever ask for this? Why did I ever ask to become pregnant? It's driving me crazy, and that's not correct. Rabbeinu Avram he gives another quotes to Ibn Ezra for another opinion. And he doesn't want that either. The hanachon, the underlined part is v'hanachon be'enai. Ki amra im kain yeli lama ze anochi ba'olam. Right? She says that if this is what my life is going to be like, if my life is going to be a life of pain, why am I in the world? Halvai eineni shamus oshalo hayisi. It would be better if I would just die, or if I wouldn't exist. Kitam kasher lo haisa hayisi ehaya, like Eov, like if I wasn't ever going to exist. Right, she said, if all my life is going to be for life of pain, so then I'd rather not have it. I'd rather not live with it. So what's the answer to Rivka? The answer to Rivka is, no, shnei goyim bevitneich. You have two children within you. Meaning, you have to go through this in order for the destiny to be fulfilled. And one of my Rebbeim once said, right, I think, who was it? It was Rabbi Aaron, Rabbi David Aaron, who we've quoted a few times before. So he, when his wife was was in labor. He was there in the hospital, so he's like bouncing off the walls. You're like, oh my gosh, she's terrible. She's going through all, etc. So she, his wife, said to him, it's okay. I might be in pain, but I'm not suffering. What does that mean? I might be in pain, but I'm not suffering. Because suffering is the emotion that you experience when you don't understand the purpose of your pain. Right? But one could be in pain. Right? If you get a shot, that I know I need to have a shot, I need to have the medication from the shot. So okay, I might be in pain from the shot, but I'm not suffering from the shot, because I know that there is a purpose for the suffering. I know there's a purpose for the pain. So what this Ramban is saying, Lama Zena, what is the point? Right? What is the point of all? Unless you can prove to me that there is a point for this, so then I'm suffering. If I'm suffering, why should I exist? So rather, well, the answer to her is, no, there is a purpose. And when we talk about the Tanisim, the four Tanisim that we have, there is a purpose to them. You just don't see it yet. And what's the end of the Pasuk? The end of the Pasuk is, Emes V'Shalom Ehavu. What does it mean, Emes V'Shalom Ehavu? That it will be the time when we won't have a distinction between peace and truth. That peace and truth are going to merge together, as the Rav wrote in his Sefer on Tisha B'Av, all places. But he, it's actually a chapter entitled "What Tisha B'Av Will Be Like in Messianic Times." So the latter refers to the Messianic era. What will the Messiah accomplish? Political freedom, of course, no doubt about it. He'll return the land to the Jewish people, rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and accomplish the ingathering of all the exiles. But none of this is what we have been waiting all these many years for. I've been waiting all these years just for the building, just to go back to Eretz Yisrael. We have been waiting for the whole cosmos, the whole universe, the whole creation to be reconciled. We have been waiting for the conflict between truth and peace to be resolved. Mashiach is not just about the building, it's not just about everybody getting back together and in Eretz Yisrael and all those great things that we talk about. The real essence of Mashiach is what? The reconciliation of peace and truth. That all of the conflicts that we have and all the things that we just don't understand, and why did this have to happen to me, and why did this have to happen to my ancestors, and why did history happen the way it had to happen? Emes v'shalom ehavu. At the end, peace and truth is going to be reconciled. The enemies, right? Peace and truth, if you remember, the Midrashim described that peace and truth, peace wanted the world, and truth didn't even want the world. You know what this matters I'm talking about? Right? That the two sides appear in front of Hashem. Why are you creating the world? Right? Peace wants the world, and truth doesn't. Right? You can't get any more opposite than that. But as Hashem, that's really what's going to happen. Emes v'shalom are going to be reconciled. There is a. So this is. We're going to go back. We have a few minutes here. We did this at the end of the first year, and we ran out of time. And we'll try it now. We might run out of time again. The Gemara tells us in Baba Metzia that Eliyahu have a shchiach b'mesifta de Rebbe yomach b'mesifta Rebbe. That Eliyahu used to come to the base medrash of Rebbe to learn together. Right, Eliyahu. Eliyahu enough. Yomachad Reish Yarchahava. One time it was the first of the month, so with Rosh Chodesh. Nagolei v'lo asa, and Eliyahu was late. Amrli, my time a nagolei lamar. So when he finally got there, Rebbe says, "Nu Eliyahu, we had a chavrusa, we had a schedule. What are you doing, Eliyahu? Why are you late?" Amrli, ad okimno li Avram umishini yadehu matzli. That I went to wake up Avram and I washed his hands, and he davened. We put him back to sleep. V'chein liYitzchak, v'chein liYaakov. V'lokimna b'hadi adadi. So Rebbe says, well, you could have just woken them all up together. You would have saved yourself a lot of time. Right, what do you do? Well, we had a chavrusa. So Savri takfi b'rachamim. No, I was concerned that they were going to reach for rachamim. U'maisi leil l'mashiach b'luzmane. And they were going to ask for Mashiach not at the right time. So Amar Le, Rebbe says back to him, V'yesh dugmasan bi'olam hazeh. So he says, well, okay, so I can't get Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to ask for Mashiach. Fine. Is there anybody like them in this world that's the equivalent to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? So Amar Le, yeah, there's one, Isa. Rebbe Chiya Ubanov. Rebbe Chiya and his sons are like Eliyahu. They also have the power to bring Mashiach. So what happened? So Gazer Rebbe Tani. So Rebbe called out a fast for everybody. Everybody was fasting. Achsinu Rebbe Chiya Ubanov. And he had Rebbe Chiya and his sons. They led the Amud. So Amar Meshiva Ruach. And as soon as they said the word Meshiva Ruach, Venishva Zika, the wind started blowing. Right? And Amar Marid HaGeshem. And as soon as they said Marid HaGeshem, all the rain started falling. Kimata Lumeimar Mechaye Mesim. So he got up to the words Mechaye Mesim, Regesh Alma. There was a big earthquake before he got up to Mechaye Mesim. Ami Birakia Man Gali Razya Ba'alma. And they said in the heavens, who is causing this? Who's causing this big ruckus in the world? So Amri, they said in the Shemaim, Eliyahu. Eliyahu is the one who revealed the secrets, and now Rabbi Chiya is leading the davening, and it's a whole mess. So Isyuhu Eliyahu, they brought forth Eliyahu, Machyuhu Shasin Pulsli Denora, and I don't know the significance of this. They gave him 60 fiery lashes. I don't know what that means. Ata Idme Luhu Kedova Denora. So Eliyahu comes back, right? The minion's still going on. Eliyahu comes back in the form of a fiery bear. That's what it means, Kedova Denora. Albinayu Vitardinhu. And he bothered everybody. Right? Nobody could concentrate anymore because he had this big fiery bear on the side. What in the world is going on here? So just the Gemara earlier on that Amud quotes the story, is really talking about Rabbi Chiya, right? Who's the chazan? Who's the one leading the Amud? Who's the one with all the power to bring down? Mashiach, right? It's Rabbi Chiya. So why Rabbi Chiya? So Rabbi Chiya was in the middle of a conversation with somebody else. The Abdi Latorah Lo Tishkachach LiYisrael, and he said, "You know what I'm doing? That Torah will not be forgotten from Israel." So Maya Vidna, what's Rabbi Chiya doing? Azlina Vishadina Kisna. He's sowing flaxseed, the Gadilna Nishri, and he's weaving nets. The Tzaidana Tavi, and he's trapping deer. Umachilna Bisrayu Liyasmi. He gives the meat to the orphans, and he takes the skin and he writes on it the five books of the Torah. And he goes to the village, and he gathers five children around, and he teaches them Chamisha Chumshi, he teaches them Torah. And he takes these six other children, he teaches them the six Sidri Mishnah. But Amrina Lahuni tells them, Ad Hadarna Vasina, when I come back, Akru Adadi Vasinu Adadi. Right? When I come back, I want you guys to discuss it together. Va'abdila la Torah doti shakh Israel. And that's what I'm doing to make sure Torah doesn't leave Israel. So we quoted already, and then we're gonna continue based on that. The Sefer Sif Seichaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, Zatzal, who passed away, he was the Mishkiach of the Yeshivas Panovich in Eretz Yisrael, wrote some major Svarim. He is one of the Rabbanim that are Zoche to the great Schus of having more Svarim printed after they passed away than were printed when they were alive. All of his notes and notes from his lectures and stuff are all being printed now. So he explained, he said, what's going on here? Why was Eliyahu holding them back from bringing Mashiach? B, if the time of Mashiach hadn't yet come, why was Rebbe pushing it? Right, what happened? Eliyahu said, Mashiach's not ready to come yet. And Rebbe said, oh yeah? Well, I'll find Rebbe Chiya and we'll pay him to daven. Right? And C, what's Rebbe Chiya? What's his big schus? What's the big merit of Rebbe Chiya? So the big merit of Rebbe Chiya, we can answer first, is that why did he, usually the Rebbe doesn't have to sow the flax in order to make the Svarim. Why was Rebbe Chiya stuck with the seemingly low jobs of the flax and the printing and all those different things? And the answer that Sif Chaim gives is that because what was Rebbe Chiya's role? What was so great about Rebbe Chiya? Rebbe Chiya could see HaKadosh Baruch Hu everywhere. Every step of the way, everywhere, every step towards what we think is the ultimate, which is just teaching, every step of that also contains the Rabbono Shalom. Rabbi Chiya saw planting flax. He saw, I am planting flax so that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will allow it to grow. And so every step of the way was all God's process, so to speak. And that's the person that will bring Mashiach. The person that will bring Mashiach. What's Mashiach? Right? It's understanding everything. It's understanding why, how God was involved in every step of the process. A, in our history, and B, in our current reality. And because Rabbi Chiya could understand that, because, right, otherwise he would only be involved in the teaching. No, the fact that he could understand that God's involved every step of the way meant that he was the one fit to bring the Mashiach. And then the final question is, well, okay, but they were told that it's not time yet. Right? Rebbe was told it's not time. So, okay, very nice. Rabbi Chiya figured it out. Rabbi Chiya figured it out. So why you, Rebbe, what gives you the right? What gives you the right to then jump ahead? Rabbi Chiya figured it out, but Rebbe, you probably haven't, otherwise you wouldn't have had the question. And other people haven't, right? So let them figure it out on their own also, and then Mashiach will come. So Friedlander says, well, that's what it means Tzipisa Leoshua. That you have to keep striving, that you keep assuming that you're further along than you are. And you keep reaching for more and for more. And yes, you may not recognize it, you may not necessarily understand it right now, but you could assume that I'm only a little bit away. And if as soon as Mashiach comes, then I'll recognize it. So if it's only going to be until we recognize it, so then it doesn't fit. Right? It's only the idea of Mashiach coming is that Mashiach will bring us that extra step, that one step further than what we've already reached. So Rebbe said, well, Rebbe Chiya's God, and Rebbe Chiya could daven for us. Let him bring us up that final step. And that the answer was, well, no, sorry, you're not ready for that. You haven't yet reached that step. And of course, then we're bothered with, well, if they haven't reached that step, have we reached the step? So no. So we've built upon those steps in the past. We've built upon those steps in the past. And hopefully, and we've gotten to the point, hopefully, that as soon as it is revealed, we will recognize it. And with that, we can understand the pasuk that we recite at the end of every tefillah, each and every tefillah, and the end of Aliyah, Ve'yah Hashem l'melech ha'kol ha'aretz, b'yom ahu, yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. On that day, that it will be Hashem will be one, and His name will be one. What does that mean? Hashem will be one, and the name will be one. So when we say Hashem and the name, that's a reference to Yudke Vavke. What's Yudke Vavke? Hayahovaviyah is that God is everlasting, God is infinite, God is everywhere. It means God is infinite, God is everywhere. That means that God has been involved in every step of the way throughout our entire history, and God is involved in the entire world as we see it today. And Yisrael Hashem, we will merit to understand that, and we'll assume that we're really almost there. Okay? Thank you, everybody, for coming.